Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Today, members of the Senate are preparing to head home for the 4th of July recess, and they'll leave Washington without a vote on their effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell faces mounting opposition from within his own party to a bill that would, among other things, effectively end Medicaid as we know it, while rewriting 15% of the nation's economy. So he says he needs more time to revise the bill.
Either Republicans will agree and change the status quo, or the markets will continue to collapse, and we'll have to sit down with Senator Schumer. And my suspicion is that any negotiation with the Democrats would include none of the reforms that we would like to make, both on the market side and the Medicaid side.
So beyond the unimaginable recourse of negotiating with the Democrats, where does this process go now? Will Republicans find a way to kill Obamacare, which they've been determined to do for the last 7 years? According to an NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll, just 17% of those surveyed say they approve of the Senate plan. So will senators get an earful when they come home for the holiday weekend? We're going to dig into those and other questions with Ron Suskind and Heather Cox Richardson. Heather is a professor of history at Boston College and author of To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Ron is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, formerly of the Wall Street Journalist, and together they co-host WBUR's brand new political podcast, Freak Out and Carry On, which could be a mantra for our times. It asks, what is happening and has it happened before? And Ron and Heather, I've been looking forward to this, and congratulations on this new podcast, and thank you for coming in.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's a lot of fun.
And listeners, you can join this conversation. What questions do you have about the healthcare debate and where it's heading, and about American politics more generally? What are you freaking out about? How are you carrying on? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and at Radio Boston. Sorry about that. Ron, you've been reporting on this debate for quite some time, going back to the passage of the Affordable Care Act. We've been dealing with this for a long, long time. So here we are, Republicans in control of the government, finally in a position to make good on this promise to repeal and replace. It hasn't happened yet. What's striking you about this moment?
Well, there's no there. And the Republicans, I think, in the policy shops, they do have some, realize that. They say, you can't fake this thing. You can't just sort of cobble together, as Paul Ryan did, this, that, and a little something here and a dollop of such, and work out something this complicated. And so now, what's fascinating, they missed their self-imposed deadline of a vote by July 4th. So now the Republicans are facing freak out. They are having a freak out moment. Right now they're going to go home to their districts. Yeah. The fireworks are going to go off and people are livid. And they're going to face that lividness, if that's the proper construction, from folks who said, you said 7 years you're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. You had your shot. You have it now. You've got a one-party government, your moment arrived, and you dropped the ball.
But is that what they're going to hear? Or are they going to hear from a majority of Americans who say, we don't want this?
No, because a majority of Americans think Obamacare is pretty okay, may need some fixing. A tiny percent think anything the Republicans said is worthwhile. Look, here's what I think they're going to hear. I think they're going to hear people saying, can't you work this out and present some kind of proposal that's coherent, that carries forward Republican principles? Because here's the fear part. What they're now realizing, either they do that or we may be facing the great nightmare for Republicans, single payer. You're hearing that actually even some Republican shops saying we're going to default to single payer if we don't step up now. And that's their nightmare.
So one of the brilliant things that you two are working on this podcast, and this is where I want to get you into this conversation, Heather, is just sort of putting this into some kind of historical context and reminding us that we're not living in this vacuum of sort of, insanity of the moment, that we've been in these places before. So, Heather, let me just ask you a little bit about some historical precedent here. First, I want to sort of focus on the way this bill was negotiated, relatively pretty much in secret by a group of 13 senators, all of them men. And you played this piece of tape on your recent podcast. I want to play it right now. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but it's a voice from the not-too-distant past railing about secrecy. Here it is.
Can you say it was done openly? With transparency and accountability? Without backroom deals and struck behind closed doors? Hidden from the people? Hell no, you can't!
So, who was that? John Boehner, right? Republican minority leader back in 2010. I think, Ron, you referred to him as the crying tan man.
Indeed. In your podcast. Then and now.
but here's the question. First of all, we can talk about the fact whether indeed this really, whether the ACA really was negotiated in secret, which arguably it was not. But is there a precedent for this kind of closed door negotiating of such a major piece of legislation that seeks to rewrite a huge chunk of the U.S. economy?
Well, yes, there is, and none of the precedents are good ones. But I think one of the things that really helps to put this moment into context is to take a step back and take a look at the larger contours of what's going on here. What you're seeing with this attempt to overwrite Obamacare is a very small group of people who have advanced a really extremist ideology. And they have done so for a number of years, and they've been able to say, listen, what we stand for as Republicans is we stand for a government that really does very little in terms of social welfare or government regulation, that really basically helps big business do its thing. And they've been able to push that ideology, which is actually not very popular. People could grab a hold of that ideology and say, yeah, this is what I'm for, because they knew they had Democrats who would stop legislation that was generally unpopular, like the overturning of Obamacare. So while a lot of people said they wanted to get rid of the ACA or Obamacare, they actually didn't. They liked what it did, but they loved the symbolism of saying that they didn't like it. Well, now the Republicans have a terrible problem. They're in power.
Well, let me say something about symbolism, because I think it's a great point. Trump, through the campaign, mostly engaged in symbolic speech. I mean, look, the wall itself, build this wall. I mean, the fact is people are writing stories in the New York Times, well, they'll get over the wall. It's more expensive than they think. The wall is a symbol. It's not meant to work.
But what's interesting,
and symbolic speech is now running into
reality. But it's interesting because in his speeches, and even still, President Trump, and at the time when he was running for president, Trump talked about making a health care program that was actually cheaper and better. So he was not running on what the congressional Republicans are now doing. So we have this problem here of ideology meeting reality. And this has happened before. And it's happened before. Every time we come to a moment where it seems like people at the very top of society are getting too much power and people down below are not. And every time that happens, when we get a case where the very wealthy feel like they need to change laws in order to put themselves into a better position and they override popular will, we get a real crisis. And every time that happens, every time that the party in power, the minority that has a lot of wealth and power, pushes through a law without the other party buying in, and it's happened a couple of times really dramatically in American history, we get this extraordinary backlash. It happened in 1854 with the Kansas-Nebraska Act, when the Southern Democrats pushed through a law that opened up the West to the spread of slavery, which of course slaves were owned by the very wealthy. There's a huge backlash against that, and it happened in the 1890s when, again, the Republicans pushed through a tariff law that really hurts badly the people at the bottom of the economy. And there's an extraordinary backlash from that as well. You need the other party to buy in. And
here's what works. That's what's at work here. But here's what I don't understand about this sort of, you know, rigid Republican opposition to Obamacare, because, yes, the Democrats had to push it through without much Republican involvement 7 years ago, back in 2010. But it was basically a Republican idea. This is what I don't understand about this rigid. I mean, I know it has everything to do with Obama, but this is a form of health insurance, paying for health insurance that was born in the Heritage Foundation that was first signed by Republican Governor Mitt Romney. It props up a market-based system of insurance. It insists on personal responsibility. This all sounds like very Republican stuff to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's part
of. And yet they hate it.
Well, it's part of the Democratic practice over decades, I think, to say, all right, what, like the Jesuits often say, find someone, something in the other person's argument I can agree with. Find that middle ground. And the Democrats say, look, we'll take a Republican position. We'll adorn it. We'll shape it. It'll be the middle ground of solution and policy. They've done it again and again. They get no credit for it. Zero.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Republicans tend to move then over further to the right. So now the midpoint shifts. And I think what you're dealing with now is the Republican Party has gone so far over that they're in need themselves of a correction to get to something that will work, because they will be judged now, finally, mm-hmm. on what works.
On how they govern.
They've yeah. got it. That's a different yeah. set of responsibilities than they're used to.
Heather, another sort of interesting bit of history that I learned from you listening to your podcast, and that is this idea, I mean, and I think you just put it really well before we went on the air. I think someone came to you and said, where did we get this idea that the government needs to provide health insurance, right?
Yes, and the idea comes originally from Teddy Roosevelt in 1910.
Right.
And again, it speaks to the question of what a government is supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, what Teddy Roosevelt says is that the government must be involved in basic human welfare, health care, regulation of business in order to guarantee that every individual can be as strong and as prosperous as he or she is able to be. And the idea that the government should be working to sort of keep the playing field level, to keep their thumb on things so that the rich don't take everything, is one that develops through the progressive era. And Teddy Roosevelt gets madder and madder and madder as the big businesses that are rising at the time sort of laugh at him and say, you know, we have so much power, you're not going to be able to stop us. And finally, he says, we cannot have a strong country unless the citizens at the bottom of that country have education and basic health and safety, because they can't be good citizens, they can't be good Americans, unless the government protects those very things. And that was actually, interestingly enough, not a market-based solution. He thought the government should back that, not some insurance company, which is a very different thing than we have now. In fact, in a sense, the program we have now that was enacted by the Democrats is a far more conservative in the modern term mm-hmm. program than a Republican, Teddy Roosevelt, wanted way back more than a century ago.
Fascinating. We're talking to Heather Cox Richardson and Ron Suskind. They are co-hosts of the new WBUR political and historical podcast, Freak Out and Carry On. What are your questions about what's going on now in Washington, about the healthcare debate? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. Let's take a call from Andre, who's calling from Fitchburg. Andre, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Great conversation, very interesting. We have an employee who's actually leaving us, a great employee, because he and his wife are expecting a child and they're moving back to Czechoslovakia because the health care and the benefits are so much greater. So my question is, if we're looking at examples of other countries, and many of them, they're not the countries that have had the advantages of the United States, why is it so difficult for us?
Andre, you're fading away, but I've got the gist of your question, thanks to my producer. What's preventing us from providing anywhere near the kind of comprehensive health care that our European counterparts are providing, for example, Ron?
Failed political system.
Failed political system.
Plain and simple.
So nothing.
And I would say history.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well, let's take that on. So say more about that, and then I want to hear more about the history.
Oh, people profit politically by extremism in this time.
Yeah.
They raise money quicker. They get the press. They get the cameras on them. They can always move further in one direction, further left, further right, and plot new territory. It's interesting because one thing we ask each other on the podcast is, when did that virtuous middle disappear as a destination for a politician? In my childhood, that was always the place they wanted to be, the yeah. high ground in the middle where they could claim the place of shared purpose. Some from the left, some from the right will fight today, but we'll be ready with a half a loaf each that we can dine on. And that is yeah. over in this time. And I guess the fundamental issue is, unless that kind of idea starts to work, self-interest will not follow it in terms of our political class.
It's interesting. You know, I was thinking of this this ability to move and talk in the middle and how that's disappeared. I mean, once upon a time, I remember thinking, in America, that happened a lot, except when it came to guns and abortion. People seem to be very absolutist about that, even though polls sort of showed that most Americans favored, you know, reasonable restraints on gun ownership, but the way the political debate gets played out was no. You know, you're on one side or the other.
Well, and, recently.
And, yeah, recently. This is what I'm saying. But it seems like that attitude has now infected the entire political debate across the board. But Heather, you wanted to talk about the history of this.
Well, it is important to remember that even on issues like abortion and gun control, most Americans still sit in the middle.
Right.
You know, the statistics say it's politicians who are dividing that
right.
dramatically. I would say the reason that we had have not been able to put in place in America the same sort of healthcare systems that they have in other countries is because America had developed this really weird connection in the 19th century between the expansion of the vote and a fear of communism, just simply because the rise of European communism that we associate with the 20th century, in fact, is dramatic in the 1870s. And when that happens, that's just when America expands the vote to African Americans. And people who opposed African American rights conflated the idea of the regular people voting with the idea of communism. So that has always been a boogeyman in America. Anytime we wanted to have any kind of social welfare program, it was always available for somebody who opposed that, who thought that their ox was going to be gored, to say, no, 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 you can't do that. That's communism. That's socialism. And you saw that with the election of Obama, all those signs that said there's a socialist in the White House. The man is not a socialist. You know, he never was. He was often people argued he was to the right of most.
Let me say, you know, to echo what you said about Teddy Roosevelt, Obama at a key meeting in 2009 when they all huddled in the White House to talk about it, actually it was in a retreat, what is the purpose of what we're doing? Obama said simply to show people government can be a force for good in their lives. That's our goal. And it does echo TR, but it is bereft largely from many of the debates today. What can government do?
We got some more folks who want to get in on this conversation. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Charlestown. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm looking for a little clarification in, I guess, the description of basically, you know, they say the proposed healthcare bill, up to 20 million people will lose coverage. But they're also saying that they were eliminating the individual mandate, where people can choose not to have coverage. Now, how many people will, quote, lose coverage, and how many people will not be covered because they choose not to have coverage? Do you understand what
I mean? Yeah, I do. I do see how you're parsing that. I don't have an answer to that. I'll put it over to my guests in a second. But, I mean, clearly when you're talking about taking hundreds of millions of dollars out of the Medicaid fund and sort of passing it on in a huge tax cut to upper-income Americans, there's going to be less money, there's going to be less health care, and that's inevitably going to result in less people being covered. The mandate is gone, too. So, yes, people will choose not to be covered. But, Ron, Heather, I don't know how you want to answer.
Well, it's a mix. The 20, 22, 23 million figure, which has been thrown around a couple times, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, puts it there, is a combination, frankly. You know, the point here is the mandate, just like you have a mandate to get car insurance, is a key part of what Obamacare is about. Many people will choose not to be covered. Many people won't be able to be covered even if they want. It's a blend of the two. And many Republicans say, look, everyone will be covered, just go to the emergency room. The cost of someone going to the emergency room rather than having a physician, having a traditional care model, is gargantuan. It wipes out a month, 2 months, a year of traditional costs for a citizen having coverage. That's why the costs are so horrifically rising.
Interestingly, the mandate was a crucial factor in the original proposal put forth by the AEI, the American Enterprise Institute.
Absolutely.
That the idea of a mandate is a conservative idea to guarantee that everybody has skin in the game of health care.
That's right. That's right.
And without the mandate, the dollars, the number of folks and the dollars just aren't there to make the whole thing work.
Absolutely. Yeah. You need the healthy people in the mix, or else you just have high-risk pools. And the folks who have real issues in the high-risk pools, their premiums, their costs will quintuple.
Sorry, go ahead, Heather.
But just in terms of the ideology of it, the idea is that you must have skin in the game, that everybody to be part of a traditional conservative American society, conservative as in protecting traditions and protecting the way a certain way of life, said that everybody should have skin in the game. So it's interesting that the mandate has now become such a football.
Yep.
One more question from Brian, who's calling from Lexington. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can you or one of your guests remind me what health care in general looked like in this country before Obamacare as far as the number of people covered? If the Republican plan does end up changing as much as it seems to, will it be back to the way things were, or is this something better or worse?
Well, Ron, remind us of, I mean, Obamacare has brought a lot of people into the health insurance universe that weren't there before.
Yeah. Well, before Obamacare, you had 48 million people that weren't covered. Again, some just chose not to be covered, but many of them simply couldn't get coverage. They couldn't afford coverage. Many defaulted to the poverty systems of medical care and support. They were costing America a great deal because they had to be treated. People tend not to die in the streets. They have to get care somewhere. But in fact, in this instance, what we're seeing as we look at what it would mean if 20 million people were off the rolls, people will die. They actually have quite a few studies out there now saying this number of people will die because they are not covered. And many more people did die before Obamacare when you had 40-plus million people without anywhere to go.
But Brian's question is an interesting one. Are we simply going back to the world before Obamacare?
Well, I'm not sure what world we're going back to because some of the old system that we had before, that's been knocked out. The way insurance companies sort of map the U.S. landscape, that map has been torn to shreds. So I don't think we really know what we default to at this point. I don't think it's back to specifically what we had before Obamacare. I think, frankly, it'd be significantly worse, or could be.
Truly. So we only have a couple of minutes left. My crystal ball shattered a long, long time ago, so I'm going to put you guys on the spot. Where does this go? So Mitch McConnell was just saying today that he's hoping, I mean, I think he's actually meeting now and trying to revise this bill so that he can get a vote after July 4th. Is he going to get a vote, or do you think there's part of this calculation on the part of Republicans that it might even be better for them not to get a vote on this? I don't know. What do you think, Heather?
I think they should try not to get a vote. I think this is an impossible thing to paper over in the party between the Freedom Caucus that doesn't want to have any kind of government intervention at all in health care and the moderates who recognize that they're going to send a lot of their citizens to death. You know, it's not something you can fix. And the smart thing to do, of course, would be to move back to the center, to work with the Democrats. But that involves splitting the Republican Party. And I just don't think the leaders are ready to do that right now.
Well, you know, I think you might actually get McConnell sort of nodding over to Schumer and saying to the Freedom Caucus, do you really want me to sit with him? I mean, that's what you're forcing me to do, and use that as leverage. And in fact, I think you might have some cross-border moments here.
And get the Freedom Caucus on board by threatening to go to the Democrats?
You betcha.
But then it's suicide when it goes forward.
It's a matter of power and its balances. McConnell will say, Freedom Caucus, yes, we outnumber them. We've got power that they don't. Let them test us. I think that's what McConnell will have to do here.
Really, really, really interesting. Okay, well, there's going to be a lot to watch as we move forward. We've been talking to Heather Cox Richardson and Ron Suskind. Heather's a professor of history at Boston College. She's the author of To Make Men Free, A History of the Republican Party. Ron, a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, formerly of The Wall Street Journal. They are both co-hosts of the new WBUR podcast, Freak Out and Carry On. Listen to it, download it. It's good. It's interesting. Heather and Ron, thank you very much for coming in, talking about this at this important time.
Great joy.
Pleasure to be here.
I'm not freaking out, but I'm going to carry on. Okay,
carry on, baby.
All right, thanks a lot. Stay with us. Coming up, the latest twist in the case of 2-year-old Bella Bond and that tragic murder. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.